You think he calls me to check in? Says, honey, I'll be home for dinner tonight at 7. How the hell should I know? Which was technically the truth. Even Christian would have had a hard time with that one. I didn't know where all his parts were. The concubine made a faint sound, and we turned to look at her. His eyes narrowed.
I've got to get her out of here. I won't have the entire Fey race trying to get past my wards. I suppose we'll have to protect her.
His distaste couldn't have been more evident. If given a choice between having a razorblade enema and protecting a Fey, had it been any other Fey than the all-powerful queen, Barons would have willingly died a few times from internal bleeding. But she was the one Fey he wasn't willing to sacrifice. Yet. I was definitely up for moving her somewhere else. The farther from me, the better. I'd been worried that he might try to keep her at the bookstore, and had been prepared to argue that, no matter how formidable his wards were, with the two of us coming and going constantly, she'd be left alone too much to guarantee her safety. What do you have in mind? I said. Half a Danny Daly flapped on a street lamp in the chilly night breeze. I plucked it off, scanned it for the date AWC, and did some hasty calculations. If it had been posted today, which it probably hadn't, considering its condition, the date was March 23rd. Maybe a week later? I read it and smiled faintly. She'd taken the bull by the horns while I was gone. The kid feared nothing. The Danny Daly. 147 days, AWC. Dudes, listen up if you want to survive. A few simple rules and regs will keep you alive. 1. Skin-tight clothes are nothing at all. Don't be bashful, don't be shy. Don't leave no place for a book to hide. The fecker's on the rampage. Has been for weeks. Need to be seeing with your own eyeballs. Ain't nothing hiding on your peeps. 2. No splitting up. Do not go anywhere alone. That's when it gets you. If you see a book, don't pick it up. 3. Don't leave your hidey-holes at night. Don't know why, but it likes the dark. Yes, I'm talking about the Shisadu. I said it, you heard me. You dudes who ain't been seeing my rags, it's a book of dark magic created by the Unseelie King almost 1,000,000 years ago. Pastime, you know the truth. If you pick it up, it will make you kill everybody around you, starting with the peeps you love. Start following the rules. No deviations, no stupid feckin'. The bottom half had been torn off, but I didn't need to see any more. I'd really just wanted to know the date. I'd missed her birthday. Chocolate on chocolate, she'd said. I'd planned to make her a cake myself. I'd throw a belated party for her, even if it was just the two of us. Hardly something the Unseelie King would think about. Birthday parties for humans.
You might have all night, but some of us don't.
Barons growled over his shoulder. I stuffed the paper in my pocket and hurried to catch up. We'd parked the Viper a block away. The Queen wore a hooded cloak and was wrapped in blankets. You have all night tonight, and tomorrow night, and all eternity for that matter. So how long were you dead this time? I asked, needling it. The rattle moved in his throat. I took a perverse pleasure in irritating him. A day? 3? 5? What does it depend on? How badly you're injured?
If I were you, Miss Lane, I'd never bring that up again. You think you're suddenly a major player because you went through that silver.
I left Christian at the mirror. I found him in the prison. I cut him off. His mouth snapped shut. Then,
why the fuck does it always take you so long to tell me the important things?
Because there are always so many important things, I said defensively. Her hair's dragging again.
Pick it up. My hands are full.
I'm not touching her. He shot me a look.
Issues much, Ms. Concubine?
She's not even the real queen, I said irritably. Not the one that ruined the concubine's life. I just don't like Fae. I'm a Shisir, remember?
Are you?
Why are you so pissed at me? It's not my fault who I am. The only thing that's my fault is what I choose to do with it. He gave me a sidelong glance that said,
that might be the only intelligent thing you've said tonight.
I looked past him to the wrecked facade of Chester's ahead and for a moment it looked eerily like a ruin of standing stones, black against a blue-black sky, from a faraway time in another place. A full moon hung above it, wearing a halo of crimson, round, fat face splattered with craters of blood. More fate changes in our world.
When you get inside, go to the stairs, and one of them will escort you up. Go directly to the stairs,
he said pointedly.
Try not to get in trouble or cause a riot on the way.
I don't think that's a fair statement. Life isn't always chaotic around me.
Like when isn't it?
Like when I'm... I thought a minute. Alone? I finished pissily. Or asleep? I didn't ask about my parents. It felt wrong, as if I no longer had any right to ask questions about Jack and Rainy Lane. It made my heart hurt. Where are you going?
I'll meet you inside.
Because if I knew whatever secret back entrance you're about to use, I said sarcastically, I might broadcast it to all the Fae, is that it? He trusted me even less now that he thought I was the king's mortal lover. How would he treat me if he thought I was the big bad himself?
Move it, Miss Lane,
was all he said. I descended into the belly of the whale to find it crammed the gills with humans and unseelie, standing room only at Chester's tonight. I couldn't be the king. These would be my children. I didn't feel remotely paternal. I felt homicidal. That sealed it. I was human. I had no idea why the mirror had let me through, but eventually I'd figure it out. I glanced around, shocked. Things had changed while I'd been gone. The world just kept morphing into something new without me. There were Seelie and Chesters now, too. Not many, and it didn't look like they were getting the warmest welcome from the Unseelie, but I'd already spotted a dozen, and the humans were going crazy over them. Two of those horrid little monsters that made you laugh yourself to death were dive-bombing the crowd, clutching tiny drinks that sloshed over the rims as they flew. Three of those blinding light trailers were whizzing through the masses. In a cage suspended from the ceiling, naked men danced, writhing in sexual ecstasy, fanned by ethereal gossamer-winged nymphs. I continued scanning the club and stiffened. On an elevated platform, in the sub-club that catered to those with a taste for very young humans, stood the golden god who'd comforted Drelia when Valaine had taken her mouth away. It was all I could do not to march over there, stab him with my spear, and denounce Valaine as a traitor. Then I had a better idea. I pushed through the crowd, pulled myself up next to him, and said, "Hey, remember me?" He ignored me. I imagined he heard that a lot if he'd been coming here a while. I stood beside him, looking out over the sea of heads. "I'm the woman that was with Darok the night we met in the street. I need you to summon Valaine." The golden god's head swiveled. Disdain stamped his immortal features.
"Summon Valaine? Those two words do not go together in any language, human."
I had his name in my tongue until Baron sucked it out. I need him. Now. This golden god might have disconcerted me once, but I had a spear in my holster and a black secret in my heart, and nothing disconcerted me anymore. I wanted Valaine here, now. He had a few things to answer for.
Valaine did not give you his name.
On multiple occasions. And his fury with you will know no bounds if he learns I asked you to get him for me and you refused. He regarded me in stony silence. I shrugged. Fine, your call. Just remember what he did to Drelia. I turned and walked away. He was in front of me.
Hey, what the fuck you think you're doing? No sifting in the club!
Someone cried. The golden god jerked and disentangled himself from the arm that he'd materialized around. It seemed to slide from his body, as if the section containing it had abruptly become energy, not matter. The guy the arm belonged to was young, with a faux hawk, a petulant expression and twitchy, restless eyes. He clutched his offended appendage, rubbing it as if it had gone to sleep. Then he seemed to see what had just sifted in next to him, and his eyes rounded almost comically. A drink appeared in the Golden God's hand. He offered it to the guy with a murmured regret.
I did not mean to break the rules of the club. Your arm will be fine in a moment.
School, man!
The guy gushed as he accepted the drink.
No worries!
He stared up at the Fae worshipfully.
What can I do for you?
He said breathlessly.
I mean, man, I'd do anything, you know. Anything at all.
The Golden God bent down, leaning close.
Would you die for me?
Anything, man. But will you take me to Fairy first?
I leaned in behind the Golden God and pressed my mouth to his ear. There's a spear in a holster beneath my arm. You broke a rule and sifted. I bet that means I can break a rule, too. You want to try it? He made that hissing Fae sound of distaste, but he eased away and stood straight. Be a good little fairy, I purred, and go get Valaine for me. I hesitated, weighing my next words. Tell him I have some news about the Shisadu. Laughter and all voices died. The club fell silent. Movement ceased. I glanced around, absorbing it. It was as if the entire place had been freeze-framed by the mere mention of the Shisadu. Though the club was a bubble frozen in time, I swore I felt eyes resting heavily on me. Was there some kind of charm cast over this place, so that if someone uttered the name of the King's Forbidden Book, everyone but the person who'd spoken the words and the person who'd laid the spell would momentarily freeze? I scanned the subclubs. Air hissed between my teeth. Two-tiered dance floors down, a man in an impeccable white suit was holding frozen cord and a kingly white chair, surrounded by dozens of white-clad attendants. I hadn't seen him since that night long ago when Barons and I had searched Casablanca. But like me, he wasn't frozen. McCabe nodded to me across the sea of statues. Just as suddenly as everything had frozen, life resumed.
You have offended me, human,
the Golden God was saying.
And I will kill you for the slight. Not here, not tonight, but soon.
Sure, whatever, I muttered. Just get him here. I turned away and began shoving my way through the crowd, but by the time I reached the kingly white chair, McCabe was gone. I had to pass the sub-club where the dreamy-eyed guy tended bar to get to the stairs. Directly, construed as a geographical command, didn't preclude stopping along the way, and since I was parched and had a few questions about a tarot card, I rapped my knuckles on the counter for a shot. I could barely remember what it felt like to mix drinks and party with my friends, jam-packed with ignorance and shiny dreams. Five stools down, a top hat gauzed with cobwebs, was a dark, unused chimney badly in need of sweeping. Straw-like hair swept shoulders that were as bony as broomsticks in a pin-striped suit. The Fyodorcha was hanging with the dreamy-eyed guy again. Creepy. Nobody was sitting next to it. The top hat rotated my way as I took a seat, four empty stools away. A deck of tarot cards was artfully arranged in its suit pocket. A natty handkerchief, cards fanned. Knobbed ankles crossed, displaying patent leather shoes with shiny pointy toes.
Weight of the world on your shoulders,
it called like a carny selling chances at a booth. I stared into the swirling dark tornado beneath the brim of the top hat. Fragments of a face, half a green eye and brow, part of a nose, appeared and vanished like scraps of pictures torn from a magazine, momentarily slapped up against a window, then torn off by the next storm gust. I suddenly knew the debonair and eerie prop was as ancient as the Fae themselves. Did the Fyodorcha make the hat, or did the hat make the Fyodorcha? Because my parents raised me to be polite and old habits die hard, it was difficult to hold my tongue. But the mistake of speaking to it was not one I'd make twice.
Relationships got you down,
it cried with the inflated exuberance of an OxyClean commercial. I half expected helpful visual aids to manifest in mid-air as he hawked his wares, whatever they were. I rolled my eyes. One could certainly say that.
might be just what you need is a night on the town.
It enthused in a too bright voice. I snorted. It unfolded itself from the stool, proffering long bony arms and skeletal hands.
Give us a dance, love. I'm told I'm quite the Fred Astaire.
It tapped out a quick step and bent low at the waist, thin arms flamboyantly wide. A shot of whiskey slid down the counter. I tossed it back swiftly.
See, you learned your lesson, beautiful girl.
Been learning a lot lately.
All ears.
Tarot deck was my life. How's that?
Told you. Prophecies, all shapes.
Why'd you give me the world?
Didn't. Would you like me to?
You flirting with me?
If I was.
Might run screaming.
Smart girl.
We laughed.
Seen Christian lately?
Yes. His hand stilled on the bottles and he waited. Think he's turning into something?
All things change.
Think he's becoming unseelie.
Fae. Like starfish, beautiful girl.
How's that?
Grow back missing parts.
What are you saying?
Balance. World lists toward it.
Thought it was entropy.
Implies innate idiocy. People are, universes aren't.
So if an unseelie prince dies, someone will eventually replace it. If not a fae, a human?
Here princesses are dead too.
I gagged. Would human women be changed by eating unseelie and end up becoming them in time? What else would the fae steal from my world? Well, actually, what would I and my... I changed the subject swiftly. Who gave me the card? He jerked a thumb at the Theodorcha. I didn't believe that for a minute. What am I supposed to get from it?
Ask him.
You told me not to.
That's a problem.
Solution?
Maybe it's not about the world.
What else could it be about?
Got eyes, BG, use them.
Got a mouth, DEG, use it. He moved away, tossing bottles like a professional juggler. I watched his hands fly, trying to figure out how to get him to talk. He knew things. I could smell it. He knew a lot of things. 5 shot glasses settled on the counter. He splashed them full and slid them 5 ways with enviable precision. I glanced up into the mirror behind the bar that angled down and reflected the sleek black bar top. I saw myself. I saw the Theodorcha. I saw dozens of other patrons gathered at the counter. It wasn't a busy bar. This was one of the smaller, less popular subclubs. There was no sex or violence to be found here, only cobwebs and tarot cards. The dreamy-eyed guy was absent in the reflection. I saw glasses and bottles sparkling as they flipped in the air, but no one tossing them. I glanced down at him, pouring high and flashy. Back up. There was no reflection. I tapped my empty shot glass on the counter. Another one clinked into it. I sipped this one, watching him, waiting for him to return. He took his time.
Look conflicted, beautiful girl.
I don't see you in the mirror.
Maybe I don't see you either.
I froze. Was that possible? Was I missing in the mirror? He laughed.
Just kidding. You're there.
Not funny.
Not my mirror.
What does that mean?
I'm not responsible for what it shows, or doesn't.
Who are you?
Who are you?
I narrowed my eyes. Somehow I got the idea you were trying to help me. Guess I was wrong.
Help. Dangerous medicine.
How?
Hard to gauge the right dose, especially if there's more than one doctor.
I sucked in a breath. The dreamy-eyed guy's eyes were no longer dreamy. They were... I stared. They were... I caught my lower lip with my teeth and bit down. What was I looking at? What was happening to me? He was no longer behind the counter, but sitting on a bar stool beside me. To my left. No, to my right. No, he was on the stool with me. There he was, behind me, mouth pressed to my ear.
Too much falsely inflates, too little underprepares. The finest surgeon has butterfly fingers. Airy, delicate.
Like his fingers on my hair, the touch was mesmerizing. Am I the Unseelie King? I whispered. Laughter as soft as moth wings filled my ears and muddied my mind, stirring silt from the dregs of my soul.
No more than I.
He was back behind the bar.
The cantankerous one comes,
he said with a nod toward the stairs. I looked to see Barons descending. When I looked back, the dreamy-eyed guy was no more visible than his reflection. I was coming, I said irritably, fingers handcuffed around my wrist. Barons dragged me toward the stairs.
What part of directly didn't you understand?
Same part of play well with others you never understand. Oh, cantankerous one, I muttered. He laughed, surprising me. I never know what's going to make him laugh. At the oddest moments, he seems to find humor in his own bad temper.
Huh. I'd be a lot less cantankerous if you admitted you wanted to fuck me and we got down to it.
Lust ripped through me. Baron said fuck and I was ready. That's all it would take to put you in a good humor?
It'd go a long way.
Are we having a conversation, Barons? Where you actually express feelings?
If you want to call a hard dick feelings, Miss Lane.
A sudden commotion at the entrance to the club, two levels above us, caught his attention. He was taller than me and could see over the crowd.
You've got to be kidding me.
His face hardened as he stared up at the balconied foyer. What? Who? I said, bouncing on my tiptoes to try to see. Is it Villain?
Why would it be?
He glared down at me.
I stripped his name from your tongue. There hasn't been an opportunity for you to get it back again.
I told one of his court to go get him. Don't look at me like that. I want to know what's going on.
What's going on, Ms. Lane, is that you found the Seely Queen in the Unseely Prison. What's going on, given the condition she's in, is that Valaine's obviously been lying about her whereabouts for months now, and that can mean only one thing. That it was impossible for me to permit the court to know that the Queen was missing. And has been missing for many human years.
Villain said tightly behind us, his voice hushed.
They would have fallen apart. Without her reining them in, a dozen different factions would have assaulted your world. There has long been unrest in Faerie, but this is hardly the place to discuss such matters.
Barons and I turned as one.
Velvet told me you required my presence, Michaela.
Villain continued.
But he said your news was of the book, not of our liege.
He searched my face with a coolness I hadn't seen since I'd first met him. I supposed my method of summoning him had offended. They are so prickly.
Have you truly found her? Is she alive? In every spare moment I have searched for her. It has prevented me from attending you as I wished.
Velvet is a fey name?
His true name is unpronounceable in your tongue. Is she here?
I nodded.
I must see her. How does she fare?
Baron's hand shot out and closed around Villain's throat.
You lying fuck!
Villain grabbed Baron's arm with one hand, his throat with the other. I stared, fascinated. I was so discombobulated by recent developments that I hadn't even realized Baron's and Villain were standing face to face on a crowded dance floor for what was probably the first time in all eternity. Close enough to kill each other. Well, close enough for Barons to kill Villain. Barons was staring at the Fey Prince as if he'd finally caught a fire ant that had been torturing him for centuries while he'd lay spread-eagled on the desert coated in honey. Villain was glaring at Barons as if he couldn't believe he'd be so stupid.
We have larger concerns than your personal grievances,
Villain said with icy disdain.
If you cannot remove your head from your ass and see that, you deserve what will happen to your world. Maybe I don't care what happens to the world.
Villain's head swiveled my way, cool appraisal in his gaze.
I have permitted you to retain your spear, Michaela. You will not let him harm me. Kill him.
Baron squeezed.
I said shut up.
He has the fourth stone, I reminded Barons. We need him.
Keltars,
Villain said, staring up at the foyer. He hissed through his teeth.
I know. Big fucking party tonight,
said Barons. Where? Is that who just came in? I said. Barons leaned closer to Villain and sniffed him. His nostrils flared as if he found the scent both repulsive and perfect for a fine bloody fillet.
Where is she?
A man roared. The accent was Scottish, like Christian's, but thicker. Verlaine ordered,
Shut him up before his next question is, Where is the Queen? And every unsealing in this place discovers she is here.
Barons moved too fast for me to see. One second Verlaine was his usual gorgeous self. Then his nose was crushed and gushing blood. Baron said,
Next time, fairy.
And was gone.
I said, where the bloody hell is the...
I heard a grunt, then the sound of fists and more grunts, and all hell broke loose at Chester's.
I dunna give a bloody damn what you think. She's our responsibility, and a hell of a job you've done with her. She's my queen, and she's not going anywhere with... So far losing her to the fucking unseely. And we'll be taking her back to Scotland with us, where she can be watched o'er properly. A pair of inept humans, she belongs in Fairy. I'll send you back to Fairy, Fairy in a fucking... Remember the missing stone, mongrel?
I looked from the Scotsman, to Barons, to Verlaine, watching the three of them argue. They'd been covering the same ground with no new developments for the past 5 minutes. Verlaine kept demanding she be turned over to him. The Scot kept insisting he was taking her back to Scotland. But I knew Barons. He wasn't going to let either of them have her. Not only did he trust no one, the Queen of the Fae was a powerful trump card.
How the fuck did you even know she was here?
Barons demanded. Verlaine, whose nose was once again perfect, said,
Michaela summoned me. As I walked up behind you, I heard you, as anyone else might have. You jeopardize her life with your carelessness.
Not you.
Barons growled.
The Highlander.
The Scot said,
Nearly 5 years passed, she visited Cian in the Dreaming, telling him she would be here this eve. The Queen herself ordered us to collect her from this address on this night. We have irrefutable claim. We are the Keltar, and wear the mantle of protection for the Fae. You will turn her over to us now.
I almost laughed, but something about the two Scots made me think twice about it. They looked like they'd been traveling hard through rough terrain and hadn't showered or shaved in days. Words like patience and diplomacy were not in their vocabulary. They thought in terms of objectives and results, and the fewer things between the two, the better. They were like barons, driven, focused, ruthless. Both were shirtless and heavily tattooed. Lore and another of Baron's men I hadn't seen before had made all of us strip down to clothing that couldn't conceal a book before permitting us access to the upper level of the club. Now the five of us stood, partially dressed, in an unfurnished glass cubicle. The one arguing, Dagus, was all long, smooth muscle with the fast, graceful movements of a big cat and cheetah-gold eyes. His black hair was so long it brushed his belt. Not that he needed one, in hip-slimming black leather pants. He sported a cut lip and a shiner on his right cheek from the skirmish that had begun at the door and spread like a contagion through several sub-clubs. It had taken five of Baron's men to get things back under control. Being able to move like the wind gave them a tremendous advantage. They didn't warn the patrons to stop fighting. They simply appeared and killed them. Once humans and Fae figured out what was happening, the outbreak of violence ended as quickly as it had begun. The other Scot, Cian, had yet to speak a word, and had escaped the brawl without a mark. But with all the red and black ink on his torso, I'm not sure I would have noticed blood. He was massive, with bunched short muscles, the kind a man gets from weight training in a gym or working off a long prison sentence. His shoulders were enormous, his stomach flat. He had piercings. One of his tattoos said Jessie. I wondered what kind of woman could make a man like him want to tattoo her name on his chest. These were the uncles Christian had talked about, the men who'd broken into the Welshman's castle the night Barons and I had tried to steal the amulet, the ones who'd performed the ritual with Barons on Halloween. They were nothing like any uncles I'd ever seen. I'd expected time-softened relatives in their late 30s or 40s, but these were time-hardened men of barely 30, with a dangerous, sexy edge. both had an unfocused distance in their eyes, as if they'd seen things so disturbing that only by refocusing with everything slightly out of focus could they gaze on the world and bear it. I wondered if my own eyes were beginning to look like that.
One thing's for certain. She doesn't belong with you,
Dagus said to Barons.
How do you figure, Highlander? We protect the Fae, and he is Fae, which gives both of us greater claim than you.
I felt someone staring at me, hard, and looked around. Valaine was watching me, eyes narrowed. So far, everyone had been so busy arguing about what to do with the Queen that no one had bothered asking how I'd found her or how I'd gotten her out of the prison. I suspected that was what Valaine was wondering now. He knew the legend of the King Silver. He knew only two could pass through it, unless I'd serendipitously stumbled on a truth with my lie, and whoever was the current queen was immune to the king's magic, which I doubted. The one person the king would have wanted to protect the concubine from the most would have been the Seelie Queen. He'd barred his castle against the original vindictive queen the day she'd come to his fortress and they'd argued. He'd forbidden any Seelie from ever entering it. I had no doubt he'd used the same spells or worse on the silver that connected his boudoir to the concubines. Valaine had to be wondering if he had any idea who their queen really was, who I really was, or if maybe their entire history was as suspect and inaccurate as ours. Regardless, Valaine knew something about me wasn't what it seemed. Besides myself, only Christian knew the queen was really the concubine, and only I knew of this duality inside me that could be neatly explained away if I was the other half of their royal equation. After a long, measuring moment, he gave me a tight nod. What the hell did that mean? That for now he would keep his silence and not raise any questions that might further muddy already muddied waters? I nodded back as if I had some clue what we were nodding about.
You couldn't even perform the bloody ritual to keep the walls up, and you want me to trust you with the Queen? And you?
Barons turned on Valaine, who was maintaining a careful distance.
We'll never get her from me. As far as I'm concerned, you put her in the coffin she was found in. Why don't you ask the Queen yourself?
Valaine suggested coolly.
It was not I, as she will tell you. Conveniently for you, she's not talking. Is she injured? How would I know? I don't even know what you fucks are made of.
Why would anyone put her in the Unseelie prison? I said.
'Tis a slow but certain way to kill her, lass,
Dagus said.
The Unseelie prison is the opposite of all she is, and as such, leeches her very life essence.
If someone wanted her dead, there are quicker ways, I protested.
Maybe whoever took her couldn't get the spear or sword.
That ruled out Valaine. He took it from me regularly, like now. Darok did, too. Whoever had taken the queen captive had to have been powerful enough to take her, but not powerful enough to get the spear or sword. Two conditions that seemed mutually exclusive. Was it possible her kidnapper had a reason to want to kill her slowly? Valaine told me all the Seelie princesses are dead, I said. There's a Fae legend that says if all successors to the Queen's power are dead, the true magic of their race would be forced to pass to their most powerful male. What if someone was trying to time taking possession of the Shisadu with killing all the female royalty, ending with Avil herself, so when the Queen died, he would end up with not only the power of the Unseelie King, but the true magic of the Queen, making him the first patriarchal ruler of their race? Who is the most powerful male? All heads swiveled toward Valaine.
What do you humans say? I have it. Oh, please,
he said dryly. The look he gave me was equal parts anger and reproach, as if to say, I'm sitting on your secrets, don't turn on me.
It is a legend, nothing more. I have served Avil for my entire existence, and I serve her now. Why did you lie about her location?
Dagus demanded.
I have been masking her absence for many human years to prevent a Fae civil war. With the princesses dead, there is no clear successor.
Many human years. It was the second time he'd said as much, but the ramifications only now penetrated. I stared at him. He'd told me far more than just one lie. On Halloween, he'd told me he had been otherwise occupied, carrying his queen to safety. Where had he really been that night when I'd so desperately needed him? I wanted to know right now, demand answers. But there was already too much going on here, and when I interrogated him, it would be on my terms, my turf.
And just how did they die?
Baron said. Valain sighed.
They vanished when she did.
He looked at me again. I blinked. His gaze held sorrow and a promise that we would talk soon.
Convenient for you, fairy.
Valain cut Baron's a look of disdain.
Look beyond the tip of your mortal nose. The Unseelie princes are easily as powerful, if not more so than I. And the Unseelie king himself is far stronger than us all. The magic would most certainly go to him, wherever he is. I have nothing to gain by harming my queen and everything to lose. You must let me have her. If she was in the Unseelie prison the entire time that she has been missing, she may be very close to death. You must permit me to take her to Faerie to regain her strength. Never going to happen. Then you will be responsible for killing our queen,
Valain said bitterly.
And how do I know that's not what you've been after all along? You despise us all. You would allow the queen to die to satisfy your own petty vengeances.
I wanted to know what Baron's petty vengeances were, but I was feeling that damned duality again. What was unfolding here wasn't remotely what anyone thought. Only I knew the truth. This was not the queen they were fighting over. It was the concubine from hundreds of thousands of years ago, who'd somehow ended up becoming the Seelie Queen. Had the king finally gotten what he'd hoped for? Had protracted time in Faerie made his beloved Fae? Had the balance that the world listed toward, as the dreamy-eyed guy proposed, turned a mortal into a replacement queen, as it would ultimately turn Christian into a replacement prince? If I was the king, why didn't that elate me? The concubine was finally Fae. I shook my head. I couldn't think that way. It just didn't work for me. Mac, I muttered. Just be Mac. Barons cut me a hard look that said,
Shelve it for later, Miss Concubine.
Look, boys, I said. Four ancient sets of eyes skewered me, and I blinked at the two Scotsmen. Oh, you two aren't at all what you seem to be, are you?
Is anyone in this room?
Baron said irritably.
What's your point?
She's safest here, I said succinctly.
That's what I've been saying all along.
Barons growled.
This level is warded the same way the bookstore is. Nothing can sift in.
Valain hissed.
Or out. Nothing Seelie or Unseelie can get to her. We don't let anyone enter the room clothed. Rainey is nursing.
You put her in with my parents? I said incredulously. People are visiting naked?
Where else would I put her?
The Queen of the Faerie is in that glass room with my mom and dad? My voice was rising. I didn't care. He shrugged, his eyes set.
Not really, and we both know that. You aren't even from this world.
Mine said. I don't give a shit who I might have been in another lifetime. I know who I am now.
It takes time and resources to ward a place as well as the room where Jack and Rainey are. We're not duplicating our efforts,
he said.
Castle Keltar was warded by the queen herself,
Dagus said.
Far from Dublin, where the Shisadu seems inclined to prowl, 'tis the better choice. She stays not open to discussion. You don't like that? Try to take her.
Baron said flatly, and in his dark eyes I saw anticipation. He hoped they would. He was in the mood for a fight. Everyone in the room was. Even me, I was startled to realize. I had a sudden, unwanted appreciation of men. I had a problem I couldn't fix. But if I could create a manageable problem, like a fist fight, and kick the shit out of it, it sure would make me feel better for a while.
If she stays, we stay,
Dagus said flatly.
We guard her here, or we guard her there. But we guard her. And if they stay, I stay too.
Valaine's voice dripped ice.
No human will protect my queen so long as I exist. Simple solution to that, fairy. I make you stop existing. The Seelie are not our enemy. You touch him, you take us all on. You think I couldn't, Highlander?
For a moment, the tension in the room was unbearable, and in my mind's eye, I saw us all going for one another's throats. Barons was the only one of us that couldn't be killed. I needed the Scotsman to perform the reinterment ritual, and Valaine and his stone to help corner the book. A fight right now was a very bad idea. "And that's settled," I chirped brightly. "Everyone's staying. Welcome to the Chester's Hilton. Let's get some beds made up." Barons looked at me as if I'd gone mad. "Then, let's go out and find some things to kill," I added. Dagus and Kian growled assent, and even Valaine looked relieved. 32. I stepped out of the shower and looked at myself in the mirror. Since dragging my aching body up the back stairs of BB&B to my bedroom 20 minutes ago, my bruises had faded by 40%. I traced my fingers across a particularly bad one on my collarbone. I'd thought I'd heard a crack and was worried something had broken. But it was only a hot, swollen contusion and was healing remarkably fast. What was with me? I might have suspected it was something to do with my being, well, not the concubine, but I'd never healed like this when I was a kid. I'd run around with skin knees constantly. Was McCabe one of my parts? Was that why he hadn't frozen too? Could the dreamy-eyed guy be a part? Who else? How many parts did not the concubine have? "I am not the king," I said out loud. "There's some other explanation." There had to be. I simply wouldn't accept it. Tonight had been a rush. We'd run into Jane, his guardians, and Danny near 14th and cut a wide swath through the city. Dagus, Kian, and Valaine had pummeled. Danny and I had sliced and diced. Barons had done whatever it was he did, but he'd done it too fast for me to see. After a time, I'd stopped trying, too lost in my own bloodlust. When I'd finally quit counting, the death toll had been in the hundreds. How could it feel so good to kill Unseelie if I was their creator? "See? More proof I'm not," I told myself in the mirror with a nod. My reflection nodded sagely back. I selected the medium heat setting on my dryer and began to blow-dry my hair. The Unseelie had retreated. Word of us had spread through the streets, and they'd withdrawn from combat, flapped, sifted, and slithered away. I guess after being locked up for their entire existence, they were in no hurry to die now that they were free. I'd left Barons, the two Keltar, and Valaine looking remarkably unsatisfied and about to fall at one another's throats. I'd been tired, sore, and beyond caring. If they were stupid enough to kill each other, they deserved the resultant problems it would create. As I slipped into pajamas, a pebble rattled against my bedroom window. Oh, I was so not in the mood for Valaine right now. Yes, I had questions, but tonight was not the night to ask them. I needed rest and a clear head. I kicked away the backpack, crawled in bed, and pulled the covers over my head to block out the blazing light from 5 lamps. The shades were supposedly gone. Supposedly isn't a word I live with well. Another pebble. I squeezed my eyes shut and waited for it to stop. 5 minutes of incessant pebbles later, a stone crashed through my window, spraying glass and scaring the hell out of me. I shot up in bed and glared at the mess on the floor. I couldn't even march over and snap his head off. I had to dig around for shoes first. A chilly breeze flapped the curtains. I tugged on boots and crunched to the window. "I'm not talking to you until you fix the damned glass, Valaine," I snapped. Then, "Oh." A cloaked, hooded figure stood in the alley below, and for a moment it reminded me of Malooch. Dark robes swirled in a gossamer cloud as the figure moved jerkily forward, as if every step was agony. The exterior spotlights gleamed across the cloak, and I saw it was fashioned of frothy light chiffon. My first thought was of the Shisadu, hiding somewhere beneath those many secretive folds. "Drop the cloak! I want to see hands! Everything!" I heard a sharp inhalation, a wheeze of agony. Arms moved with arthritic carefulness, loosening a brooch at the throat. The hood fell and the cloak rustled to the ground. I nearly vomited. I bit back a scream. I wouldn't wish it on my worst enemy. It was Fiona in the badly mutilated flesh.
Mercy!
Skinned lips parted on a sibilant hiss. I turned away from the window and leaned back against the sill, hand over my mouth. My eyes were closed, but there was no escape. I could see her on the backs of my lids. She'd tried to kill me in what seemed another lifetime. She'd taken up with Derek O'Banion, then Darok, all because she loved Jericho Barons. The night the book had brought her to my balcony, skinned alive, I'd wondered if all the Unseelie she'd eaten would keep her from dying. Eating Unseelie has remarkable healing properties, but apparently growing a new human skin, or maybe healing from any magical injury the Shisadu had inflicted, was beyond its ability. "I thought the book killed everyone it possessed," I said finally. My words rang out in the hushed night.
"It has different appetites for us who eat Unseelie."
Her pained voice floated up.
"It killed Darok. He ate Unseelie."
"Silencing him for what he knew,
which was,
if only I knew, I would."
She made a garbled sound, and I assumed from the wheezes and moans that she was stooping to retrieve her cloak. I tried to imagine what would hurt worse on flayed flesh, the cold night breeze or clothes. Both would be a walking hell. I couldn't imagine how she stood the pain. I didn't say anything. There was nothing to say.
"Try it myself," she finally continued. "Pray it killed me, too."
"Why are you here?"
I turned and stared down at her. Although she'd put her cloak back on, she'd left the hood down.
"Can't heal."
Gray eyes shimmered with constant pain in bloody sockets. Even her lids were gone.
"Can't die. Tried everything."
"Still eating Unseelie?"
"Dulls pain."
"It's probably what's keeping you alive."
"Too late."
"You mean you think you've been eating it so long that even if you stop now, you might not die?"
"Yes."
I considered that. Depending on how much she'd eaten, it was possible. Malooch had been marbled with fey like a steak with fat. Maybe even if she stopped entirely, she would never be fully human again. I'd eaten it only twice in my life and hoped it had passed from my body forever.
"Can't find."
Her gaze drifted to the abandoned dark zone, and I understood that she'd hunted for a shade to kill her. But they'd moved on long ago to greener pastures, literally, and she didn't look capable of walking very far. I couldn't imagine her driving a car, sitting on that flayed flesh. I shuddered.
"Only spear, sword will
make the fey parts quit keeping you alive," I finished.
I looked away, stared out over the roof of Baron's garage at the hundreds of dark roofs beyond. "You want me to kill you?" There was a terrible irony here.
"Yes."
"Why not try Danny? Don't you think you might have better luck there?"
"Said no."
I blinked. She'd actually known about Danny, found her, and Danny had refused.
Said you had to.
And you think I have mercy?
Can't look at me.
I jerked my gaze back to her skinned face. I can ignore you for the rest of my life. But it wasn't true, and she knew it.
Mercy!
She hissed again. I punched the ledge of the window. There were no easy choices anymore. I didn't want to go down there and look at her. I didn't want to stab her. I couldn't possibly let her go on suffering if I could do something about it. And I could. I gazed longingly at my bed. I wanted nothing more than to crawl back in. My window was broken. The room would be freezing in no time. I reached for my holster, strapped it on over my pajama top, slid the spear beneath my arm, grabbed a coat from the chair, and headed for the stairs. I had a small epiphany on the way down. My spear would kill the fey parts of Fiona, granting her the ultimate demise she wished, but very slowly. It had taken months for Malouche to die. When I stabbed a fey, it was entirely fey and died swiftly. But when a human eats Unseelie, it laces the human's body with pockets and threads of immortal flesh, and there's no way to stab each and every thread or pocket, so the wound works instead like a slow poison. I wonder if whoever created the immortal slaying weapons deliberately designed them that way, to carry out a horrific punishment for a horrific crime. However, there was another potential method of execution that would either kill her instantly or answer a question I badly wanted answered. The entire time I'd been fighting tonight, I'd been thinking about it. I wanted to test the silver in the White Mansion. Maybe lots of people in Fae could go through it. I'd been considering taking an Unseelie captive and forcing it into the silver. Now I didn't have to. I had a volunteer. And even better, she was mostly human. If Fiona could pass through the King's silver without dying, that would mean the legend was a bluff. It killed barons. I shrugged. That might have been an anomaly. Barons defied the laws of physics. Maybe humans could pass through it just fine. Maybe the Unseelie King hadn't warded it as well as he thought he had. Maybe humans from our planet were different from his mortal concubine, and how could you ward against something you didn't even know existed? All I knew was I wasn't the king, and here was my chance to prove it. I hated losing more time, but my peace of mind was worth losing time for. I stepped into the alley and moved slowly toward her. Hood up! She made a sound that was almost laughter, but made no move to lift it. Do you want to die? If so, hood up! Eyes hot with hate, moving stiffly and with painstaking care, she adjusted the fabric to shadow her face. As she put her arms back down, a gust of wind blew the stench of her straight into my nostrils. I gagged. She smelled of blood and decaying flesh with a strong medicinal odor, as if she was eating painkillers by the handful. Follow me.
Where?
The spear will kill you, but it will do so slowly. I might have a way to kill you instantly. The hood turned toward me as if she was searching my face to divine my motives. Daddy told me once that we believe others are capable of the worst we ourselves are capable of. Fiona was wondering if I might be as cruel to her as she'd have been to me in the same position. It will be hell for you to have to walk there, but I think you'd rather spend 20 minutes getting there to die than the weeks or even months it could take to die from the spear wound. Because of the Unseelie you've been eating, you'll die slowly.
Spear! Not instant.
There was shock in her voice. No. I knew the moment she accepted it. When I turned and headed for the silver in the brick wall, she followed. I heard the soft swish of her cloak behind me. There's a price, though. If you really want to die, you're going to have to tell me everything you know about...
I can't leave you alone for a minute, can I?
Baron said.
Where the hell do you think you're going this time, Ms. Lane? And who is that with you?
The three of us went in together. It was one of the most awkward, uncomfortable walks I've taken. I had one of those outside-my-skin-watching-from-above moments. 8 months ago, when I'd first ducked into BB&B, seeking sanctuary from my first encounter with the Dark Zone, I'd never have imagined this moment, pushing into a brick wall behind the bookstore. I mean, really, a brick wall! With the badly skinned and heavily narcotized woman who'd run BB&B with Barons, who was waiting for me to put him in a good mood again with sex, and who turned into a 9-foot-tall beast on occasion. Also, I could find out if I was the king and creator of the monsters that had overtaken my world. If I'd thought my life would come to this, I'd have marched straight for the airport that day and flown back home. Fiona hadn't uttered a syllable since Barons had appeared in the alley. She'd drawn her hood tightly around her face. I couldn't imagine what she had to be feeling as she marched to her suicide between the man she'd loved to her own destruction and the woman she believed had taken him from her. At first, Barons had disagreed with my plan vehemently. He'd wanted to use the spear and kill her without going back into the Silvers and wasting weeks, possibly months, doing it. But after I pulled him aside and explained that she was the perfect test, he'd reluctantly agreed, and I realized that he, too, hoped the legend was an erroneous myth. Why? He thought I was the concubine. Considering what I was afraid I was, the concubine didn't seem like such a bad thing to be. Unless he'd concluded that if I was the concubine, the king himself was destined to come for me at some point, and that was one foe he might not be able to take on, even in beast form. Perhaps he worried that the king would take his oop detector, and then where would he be?
But if you ask her one thing about me, Miss Lane,
he'd murmured against my ear,
I'll kill her where we stand, and you won't get your little test.
I glanced at him from the corner of my eye. Could he? In the same way he killed Fay, whatever it was. Yet he didn't offer it as mercy. I wondered what he was feeling as we moved down a rosy corridor. Did he mourn her, this woman who'd run his store for years? This woman he'd trusted with more of his secrets than he'd ever entrusted to me. He hadn't offered to kill her swiftly, to end her suffering. He'd used it only as a threat to keep me from prying into his business. His face was set in hard, cold lines. He looked down at the top of Fiona's head, and his face changed. Then he saw me looking at him, and it was again a mask of stone. He did mourn her. Not her suffering or death, but that she'd chosen the path that had led her here. I suspected that he would never have stopped caring for her and taking care of her if she hadn't turned on me. But that action had sealed her fate. Barons was one of the most complicated men I'd ever met, and at the same time one of the simplest. You were with him or you were against him. Period. End of story. You got only one chance with him. And if you betrayed him, you ceased to exist in his world until he got around to killing you. Fiona had ceased to exist when she'd let Shades into the bookstore to devour me while I was sleeping, thereby stealing his only chance at something he wanted very badly, whatever it was. And the only thing he felt now was a twinge of wishing it hadn't turned out this way, a whisper of a regret. Not so long ago, he'd put a knife through her heart, and if she hadn't been eating Unseelie, it would have killed her. He'd been ready to kill her in the alley, and not mercifully. I stole another look at him, realizing the full extent of what I'd just been mulling over. He thought I'd betrayed him by taking up with Darok when I'd believed he was dead. But he hadn't excised me from his life. Whatever he wanted from the Shisadu, he wanted very badly. And according to my own assessment of him, once he had it, he would kill me. He must have felt my gaze, because he looked at me.
Something wrong, Miss Lane.
My gaze mocked. Is there anything right about this situation? He smiled without humor.
Besides the obvious.
I shook my head.
You're looking at me as if you expect me to kill you.
I jerked. Was I that easy to read?
You're wondering what kind of man I am, and how I feel about all this.
I stared.
You think you betrayed me, and one day I will kill you for it.
I'm not sure why I even bothered talking. My eyes flashed with temper. I hated being so transparent.
That you allied with Derok to obtain your goals did not betray me. I'd have done the same.
Then why are you so pissy?
That you fucked him will be forgiven once you fuck me. Another woman might run headlong toward absolution.
I put an end to our discussion by staring straight ahead. It was slow going. Fiona couldn't move very quickly. We proceeded at a snail's pace through rose halls, to sunshine, to bronze.
The libraries,
Baron said as we passed.
We'll stop on the way back since we're in here anyway. I want another look around.
I felt a sudden tension in the cloaked figure next to me as the dark hood turned my way. I didn't need to be able to see her face to sense the bitterness of her gaze or divine the morbid turn of her thoughts. His comment had driven home that he and I would be walking out of here together, and she would be dead. And I knew she thought we would be having a fabulous time, dancing and fighting, having sex and living, while her existence would be over, extinguished as if she'd never been born, unmourned, unmissed. I felt hatred emanating from beneath that cloak, malevolent and dark, and was glad to see black floors ahead. I felt like we were prison guards, taking the long, slow, hellish walk to the electric chair. The convict between us would have done anything to escape her sentence, but fate had left her no choice but to crave oblivion.
How?
She whispered as we entered the black tunnel. I looked at Barron's and he looked at me. Once we'd stepped onto the black floors, I'd begun to feel the sexual tension this part of the castle inevitably stirred. One glance at his face confirmed he was feeling it, too. I was horrified to realize that Fiona must be feeling it, too. Barron's replied tightly.
There is a silver that divides the chamber of the Unseelie King and the concubines. Only those two can step through it. All others die instantly.
Even you?
So she knew he could die and come back.
Yes.
There was that awful wet sound. Laughter, but not.
She knows now.
Barron's gave me a look that clearly said,
Shut her up, or I'll end it now.
Yes, I know all of it, Fiona, I lied. She moved forward, silent once again. Christian was asleep in the Unseelie King's big bed, long black hair, a silken fan across a pillow. If Fiona hadn't been skinned and in so much pain, I would have pushed her across the white half of the boudoir into the mirror to get it over with, but I couldn't bring myself to touch her.
Who the... What the fuck?
Baron stalked across snowy furs, through diamond-studded air to the enormous silver, staring at the male in the bed. I glanced at the fireplace, expecting to see the concubine, trying to figure out how I would explain things to Barons if the queen's memory residue was stretched out there. But the furs were empty. The fire banked to low white embers. His voice startled Christian awake. The young Scot rolled over and sprang to his feet. Silk sheets dripped from his body, leaving him nude and visibly aroused. For a moment I thought he'd gotten rid of the tattoos. But then they appeared, moving up his legs, his groin and his abdomen, then around the side of his chest before vanishing again. I joined Barron's at the edge of the mirror, trying not to stare, but gorgeous naked men are gorgeous naked men. I wondered if memories of the king and queen's lovemaking had been affecting him the way they'd got to me. His eyes glittered with lazy sensuality, and I could too well imagine the bent of his dreams. He might be difficult to pry out of the chamber when the time came. He stood on the dark side of the boudoir and looked at me.
I must be dreaming. Bring that sweet ass over here and I'll show you what God made women and well-hung Scotsmen for. Who the bloody hell is that?
Barron's demanded. Christian McElter.
That's not Christian McElter.
Barron's exploded.
That's Unseelie royalty. Ah, fuck me.
Christian ran his hands through his long, dark hair, muscles rippling in his shoulders.
Is that really what I look like, Mac?
I almost said, I don't know. I can't stop looking at you. Fiona pushed me. The bitch actually shoved me from behind. I was so flabbergasted I didn't even gasp. I was speechless. I'd come here on a mission of mercy, and she'd tried to kill me again. She'd concluded from what Barron's had told her that I would die if I touched the silver, too, and her final act had been to try to take me with her. She pushed me hard enough that I shot straight through the unresisting silver and crashed squarely into Christian, knocking him backward onto the bed. We got tangled up in each other trying to get out. Behind me, Barron's roared. On top of me, Christian made a raw, horny sound and ground himself against me. I sucked air between my teeth. Every instinct in my body wanted to have sex, here, now, with anyone. Oh, this place was dangerous. Christian, it's the chamber. It makes sex.
I know, lass. Been here a while.
He raised one of his arms that was pinning me to the bed.
Get out from under me. Move your ass.
He gritted. When I didn't react instantly, he snarled.
No, I won't be able to see it again.
I looked at him. His eyes were out of focus, fixed on some point inside me, like a fey prince. I shot out from beneath him and scrambled from the bed. He crouched there a moment.